people from nowhere. They'll be picking the general manager for your station. But they haven't taken away your voice yet. Send a message to the people from nowhere. Vote yes for them to run your station without you. Or to keep your voice at your own local station board, vote no. It's still up to you.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. Stay with us. It's time for Off the Hook, special extended edition. Listener phone calls, updates, the works. We made it. We're here live in the studio at WBAI in Brooklyn. Edition of Off the Hook that's probably going to be unlike any other edition of Off the Hook. Not a whole lot to do with hacking, or maybe a lot to do with hacking, because we have to think like hackers in a situation like this. It's Emmanuel Goldstein here, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yes, I'm over here.
You're over there, and that's it. We set a strict attendance limit to the show, and because you and I already are in the same place, it's we're not going to catch something off each other that we haven't already caught. So we're okay. And I gotta express some frustration, though. I really do. And this goes to a lot of people. We've been noticing this in many places, not only in the media, but here locally. People aren't taking this seriously enough. We asked our staff stay away, and some of them showed up anyway, and they're not taking it seriously. I don't know what we have to do. Folks, this is a pandemic. This is a virus which right now is spiraling out of control. It's deadly. It's a lot worse than the flu. Okay, people are comparing this to the flu, and it's, yeah, you can do that. You can say, how is it different? But when you actually look into how it's different, you'll notice that it's much, much worse, much more contagious, much more deadly. And guess what? There's no vaccine for it. So we could see this thing getting so much worse, especially if we don't follow the precautions that have been laid out. You think it's some big conspiracy? I mean, you know, don't think the people who control things aren't taking notes as to how people react in situations like this. Fine. But the entire scientific community and the entire world are not conspiring to control us right now. This is the real thing, and we need to take it seriously. And I'm pissed off as hell that people aren't doing that, especially people that I know better. So for God's sake, it doesn't mean you have to live in misery and suffer. No, it doesn't mean that at all. There's all kinds of things we can be doing right now that are positive. Hell, you can go outside as long as you don't congregate and meet up with lots of people. but go outside and enjoy the quiet and the lack of pollution. I mean, there's less of it. There's still pollution, but there's, you might be able to see the stars. Who knows? This is something that we've never lived through before and hopefully never will again, but there is so much that we can learn in the process. I mean, think about it. We talk about climate change all the time. Well, what are the results, the short-term results of turning a lot of things off, of not having a lot of planes flying around, of shutting down factories and not driving? I mean, it's only been a few days, but already the effects are being felt. Imagine what we can benefit from if we are able to take knowledge out of this and say, wow, okay, this is the effect this will have. Maybe we can apply this and reduce things and get better as a planet. You know, there are all kinds of positive things you can take away from this. And I just hope people realize that and not wallow in misery. Yes, it's frightening. We're all scared. We're all battling depression at times. It's normal. It's completely normal. You are not alone. And we are going to get through this. The question is, how much of a price will we have to pay? The economy? Yeah, the economy's wrecked. Forget about the economy. That's not the important thing right now. You're the important thing right now. Staying safe, all right? And getting enough food. There's plenty of food. There's no food shortage. People don't need to be rushing the grocery stores and depleting all the pineapples, whatever you think is running out. No. And we would have plenty of toilet paper if you morons didn't go out and buy it all. It wasn't a toilet paper shortage. And I say that with love to all the morons out there who bought toilet paper. Wow. We were in a supermarket yesterday, Kyle, out on Long Island, and it was calm. We made Irish corned beef, because it was St. Patrick's Day, and we, damn it, we wanted to have a St. Patrick's Day.
I found a giant head of cabbage, and we made a nice corned beef cabbage. And I will say there were open coolers full of corned beef. I mean, if you don't eat meat, that's another story, but there is a whole lot of extra St. Patty's Day stuff.
You would think that would have disappeared.
Right.
But it didn't.
Nobody celebrated. Yeah, there's just tons and tons of briskets and corned beef sitting around, which is in contrast. We've been to other stores where meat has been really bought clean out. But during holidays, they tend to order stuff because they know people are going to make different meals, like turkeys on Thanksgiving, these kinds of things. So I noticed just mountains and mountains of brisket sitting around. So it was a really subdued St. Patrick's Day as a result of that. But I just want to point out, it's a mitigation now. We were in containment before. This is mitigation. And these strategies only work if people follow the guidelines. And as you said, it doesn't have to be like misery. And there's creative ways to handle it. But you still... we're all still better off if as many people as possible follow the guidelines that have been put out there. The people that have come up with that stuff are not joking. They know this stuff. They're doing the best job to assess this ongoing situation. So it's probably best that we pay attention and listen. And if you see people maybe not taking it as seriously, maybe help guide them to the reality of it. Right now, if you look at the trajectory from the way things went in China and some of the numbers, there was supposed to be a doubling this week, and it went somewhere close to that. I think last week we were around 1,000 cases in New York, and the doubling compared, or China, but Italy, their cases jumped to 10,000. Well, we're over 7,000 now, and I think at around 110 deaths in New York State alone. And of course, we're speaking about our locality here and our listenership in the tri-state area, but surely there are people online listening and people around the world who are also watching the trajectory and how those numbers are increasing, and they're increasing as predicted. And guess who's predicted that? The very same people that are that are giving us guidelines. So it is worth paying attention to and following as closely as you can, and just don't do things that are unnecessary and foolish. In especially this week,
yeah.
Next week, what the other number I'm hearing is that the peak caseload is in 45 days. Now, given that we're over 7,000 now, right, in, what is this, Wednesday, it's not even the end of the week.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that kind of trajectory, 45 days is a long time. It's a
isolated.
It's
a month and a half.
Yeah, it's a big, big ask, and people need to galvanize, kind of get around the reality of taking on that kind of group exercise. But we are... we're going to have to do this in unison if it works. And this is mitigation. We're mitigating the spread.
I know there are people out there who are just beside themselves with worry, not just about health issues, but just about how are they going to continue? How are they, you know, what's up with their jobs? How do you pay the rent? How do you pay the mortgage? And the thing you have to keep remembering and saying to yourself is that everybody is going through this right now. It's not just you. It's not just you who got laid off. It's not just you who has a rent payment due next week. Everybody is facing the same thing. Do not shoulder it all yourself. And I think we really need to support each other, come together, and demand certain things. For one thing, you know, it's not up to me, but if it were up to me, I would tell everybody, do not pay the rent. Do not pay the rent until this is over. Do not pay the mortgage until this is over. Because if you're not going to get paid, how can you be expected to pay these other entities? Now, they should get paid, I agree, but that will be part of a stimulus package or something. But there is no way that individual people should be the ones that are suffering while everything else is business as usual. No, business stopped being usual a couple of weeks ago, and now it's kind of in a free fall. So take care of the important things, your health, making sure you're fed and that the people around you are okay, and then worry about obligations, financial obligations to others. And if you can meet those obligations, it's not the end of the world. It's not. And we will get through this together. I have to tell myself that constantly because I'm in the same boat. You're in the same boat. We're all in the same boat. And we don't know where this is going to go and what the ultimate price will be, but we do know that we're going to stand up for ourselves and the people around us and work like hell to make sure people are happy and taken care of and not driven insane by any of this. You see how quickly it all falls apart. I mean, just look at Wall Street, which we didn't really care about before, and I don't really care about too much now. But it is sobering to see just how quickly it plummets and all the things that you've been hearing over the years. If you listen to this radio station about how there's going to be a reckoning someday, well, here we are. Here's the reckoning, and it came from a little tiny virus. Doesn't take much, but that's the reality of the situation. Hey, go ahead, Kyle.
Oh, no, I was just adding to your point on rent. I mean, that is sort of a predatory thing in a situation, you know, asking that of people who are not just choosing not to work or they're unable to because of an injury, but they're in large quantities, many, many people being basically forced or compelled, please do not work. And then when you put burdens like financial burdens on people that cannot physically act to save their own or to respond to that request, they then have to go out and do things to try to make ends meet because you're imposing that upon them, which in turn makes people less safe because then they have to kind of scrap things together or try to find a way to pay someone off who's, as I said, being a bit predatory in the moment. So, but I also have had that very same feeling of stress. I caught myself, I think, just running around, you know, doing chores or cooking and stuff like that. And I just felt this sort of weight of emotion and got a little choked up. I was like, I had to check in with myself. Like, this is an enormous amount of stress to take on. And I mean, impending doom is sort of our comfort zone. Like, I'm okay with that, mm-hmm. you know, in a large degree. But there is so much uncertainty out there. And I think that... expressing it, talking to people, but definitely checking in with your own state. And I think that goes a long way to physical health. It's that sort of mental piece.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. We've all felt something, whether it's seeing a piece on television that's particularly moving, or just hearing a piece of music.
Yes, music.
It just, it really makes you emotional. And, you know, when you think how fragile we really all are in the end.
Always were.
Yeah, we forget that. We forget that. We just live our lives, not to minimize it, but we really have no control over what happens. I mean, other than our own lives and the planet itself, how we take care of it. But, you know, a meteor could hit us. All kinds of catastrophes could happen. They could all be wiped out in a second. But that's not what's happening now. So if there's any comfort, just know that it could always be worse. And it's not a Chernobyl, you know. It's not there's not radiation in the air. You can go outside. You can look up and see the sky and see wildlife, maybe, because all of a sudden there aren't as many humans around. There are all kinds of things we can do, and we can talk to each other. I got to say, I've got a little pet peeve here. All this social distancing we're talking about. It shouldn't be called social distancing, because we're trying to be social. We need to be social. It's physical distancing is what we're doing, you know, keeping away from each other physically. And it's, you know, sometimes people don't get it right away, but you have to be firm and follow the guidelines, because you don't want to catch something, even though someone may not know they have it. They could have it. So unless you're around somebody you already live with, you're taking a risk if you get too close to somebody. So physical distancing, yes, but social distancing, no.
Yeah.
We need to be social now more than ever. And that doesn't mean just signing on to social networks and believing everything you read, because, boy, there's a lot of crap on there. But it does mean talking to people, supporting them, and listening to them. That is hugely important now. And I think we can become better people doing that.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult when you kind of think back to how casual people were about interacting physically, and especially those of us maybe that are really affectionate or have a lot of people in our lives that we love, that maybe we hug as a greeting. All of these things, mm-hmm. they're not on the table now, but there are many, many ways to share warmth and to be related, especially in this kind of odd moment for all of us.
Absolutely. Hey, our colleague and cohort, Alex, was supposed to be here tonight. Actually, the rules changed. We were going to have three people in the studio, and then we changed. Actually, one of the reasons we changed is because Alex got sick. Alex got sick, and I realized, you know what? It's probably not wise to have people who don't already live together in the studio at the same time. It's you know, not that big. And we don't want to take any chances. We don't want this to be the place where people take chances. Many shows are already coming in via Skype or various other means. And most other radio stations aren't having live programming at all. So let's keep what we can keep, but be safe at the same time. So Alex, unfortunately, got sick, but he's also in Pennsylvania. So physically, he's also pretty far away. But he joins us on the telephone. Alex, are you there, and how are you feeling?
I am indeed. I am well. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, we hear you fine.
All right, perfect. That's you know, the modern miracle of Bluetooth technology, I guess.
Well, you contacted me yesterday and said that you had a fever and just weren't feeling well. You want to describe what's been going on?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, you know, the plan was that my wife and I thought that we would come out to our place out in Pennsylvania. We've got a place out in the Poconos that, you know, we're lucky enough to have. And we thought, well, now's as good a chance as any to get over there for an extended period of time while we're all telecommuting, working from home. And it looked like the city was going to get a little crazy, come out here, have some fresh air. So I came out over the weekend. Began to prepare the house, get food, firewood, you know, all kinds of fun stuff like that. Was also taking advantage of being out in the wilderness. And I remember it was Sunday. I actually took Cleo, my beagle, along a really nice walk, a 5-mile walk in the woods around the lake. And came home that night, unstacked some firewood. I felt great. And then later on that night, I started to feel a little achy. The next morning, I woke up and felt actually quite a bit worse. I drove down to the local Rite Aid, picked up a thermometer pretty quickly, took my temperature in the parking lot, and realized I had a fever. I had a low-grade fever, and I needed to get my butt home. So I went home, keep taking my temperature. It's going up and up, and I'm getting achier and achier. And then I had to call my wife and tell my wife, sweetie, I'm sick. I got a fever. The plan was to go back to the city and to get them and come back here. Now I am here by myself with Cleo, the beagle, the aggressively affectionate little beagle. But here I am now holed up by myself in our house for God knows how long. I mean, thank God I'm doing all right. My fever has been breaking. I'm not entirely sure whether or not this is the coronavirus. If it is, I've, you know, knock on wood, only had very mild symptoms of this as of right now. But it does make me very tired, and I do feel it when I wake up in the mornings. And if I'm not taking Tylenol, the fever will come back. So I do have to say, it's a scary thing. And when this happened to me on Sunday night, and I did feel like I was getting a fever when it was confirmed to me on Monday, I started to panic a little bit because you don't know what's coming next. And you read all these crazy stories. Most of them are on the New York Post about the most dire situation possible. And I was worried that when I went to bed that night, I might develop some kind of respiratory symptoms. But having spoken with a couple of doctors, it turns out that these things just don't materialize out of nowhere. And I've been doing what the doctor said. I've been taking lots of vitamins. Lots of vitamin C. I have been taking Tylenol quite regularly, probably too much Tylenol. About 1,000 milligrams of Tylenol every 6 hours was recommended to me. Probably a bit much, but it's certainly effective. And I'm feeling okay. The fever is breaking. It's coming back when I'm stopping the Tylenol, but I definitely feel like my health is trending in the right direction. Thank God.
Well, we're happy to hear that. But my question now, and we've already had some back and forth discussion on this. Should you be tested or not? My feeling was that you should be tested, but you tell me that doctors say otherwise.
Well, you know, I think it's a rapidly evolving situation, and it depends on where you are geographically located. 2 or 3 days ago, when this was all sort of unwinding around me, whether or not this was the coronavirus was certainly a distinction without a difference at that point, because, you know, look, we're all quarantined. We all have to take the same precautions. And they were only really testing people that were gravely ill, you know, in respiratory distress. And the doctors would advise you a couple of days ago to stay away from the hospitals unless you have respiratory distress, because there are not enough tests out there for them to test people that are mildly symptomatic, and for them to have enough tests left over to test people that, you know, actually really need it. They need to, you know, and especially healthcare workers. So the advice was, if you're not really ill, stay away from the hospitals, stay away from the emergency rooms, go if you need to. But if you go to these places waiting around for a test, the likelihood that you will get infected, because there are congregations of people that are infected over there, are going to increase. So, you know, it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. However, now that there are more tests available, especially in places like New York, and they have these drive-through testing facilities, it's a different story now. But where I am in Pennsylvania, I believe it's still status quo ante, as the same state as it was before just a couple of days ago, in that, look, don't crowd the emergency rooms over here. Stay away from them. If you need help desperately, go over there. They'll get you a test. But everyone that I have spoken to had really said, you know, look, just rest up. Take it easy on your lungs. Don't put anything foreign in your lungs. No vaping, no smoking, smoking of anything. Just, you know, take everything very easily. Make sure that you rest. Give yourself and your body enough time to heal. And I have been taking that advice to heart, and thank God it has been working. But to go back to your point, though, Emmanuel, one of the things you and I were discussing earlier today, going back and forth, was that, you know, there was this hotline established for New York State residents. Do you want me to give out the number, by the way?
Well, I'll give out the number since my voice might sound a little better right now, and I want it to be absolutely clear. It's 1-888-364-3065. That's 1-888-364-3065. When you call that number, that's the number you call to get an appointment to go to one of the drive-up places. And they're increasing by the day. This is a really positive development in New York State. There's one in Nassau, there's one in Suffolk, there's one in Westchester, and they're popping up all over the place. When you call that number, you will talk to somebody who will tell you if your symptoms indicate that you should get tested. You called the number, right? Right, Alex? Did you talk to somebody?
I did. I spoke to somebody for about 15 minutes, actually.
Wow.
We had a long chat. And look, you know, I was very skeptical of calling this number and getting any, you know, real information. But, you know, I think there's some good nuggets that we got here for the listeners that I think will help with people wondering whether or not they should be tested, because I queried this guy pretty well. You know, I think he might have felt like he was sitting for a deposition. So in any event, I called up. The first thing that struck me was, you know, of course, you know, they say they're experiencing high call volume. And I think the wait time I was given was a span between 17 and 29 minutes. And I thought to myself, oh, Christ, I'm going to be sitting on the phone for, you know, a half an hour. I have to say, though, it was like right at the 17-minute mark that somebody answered the phone. So it was eerily accurate on the low end as to when somebody would actually pick up. And when they did pick up, they were quite helpful. I told them what my symptoms were, told them I was a New York State resident, that I was out of state at the moment, but I could come back for a test. And so what was interesting to me was that the first thing he asked me was, well, have you gone to see your general practitioner doctor yet? And I said, no, I haven't, but, you know, I can't imagine my doctor would want me to come in if he thinks I'm symptomatic. I mean, this is what, you know, is that not common? And he mentioned to me, oh, well, it's very common that doctors won't let you into there. Your general practitioner may not want you to come to his office if he thinks that you have the coronavirus. This is what you're seeing all the time on social media these days.
Alex, he may have been thinking that it's best to talk to them first because you may have an underlying condition. He may know your particular health and medical history and could make a lot more accurate judgment over your current state or current symptoms. Maybe that makes sense.
You're on to the right lead here for sure, Kyle, because what they would really like to rule out before they schedule an appointment for you is ruling out the normal flu or the common cold. That's what they'd like to rule out to make sure that, you know, you're not mistaking that with the coronavirus. So I think, you know, you're absolutely on the right track there. And so if you don't have that, you can still get scheduled for an appointment at one of these drive-through places, or you can go to a testing facility. Let's say if there's no, you know, you don't have a car and you can't go to the coronavirus drive-through testing facility. There are testing facilities around the city. I don't know exactly where they are. Or somebody can even come to your home and administer a test, which I didn't know about.
I didn't know about that either. Wow.
Yeah. And so these are all, you know, this is all really interesting stuff that, you know, you think should be out there. But I had to call, wait 17 minutes, talk to the guy on the phone and, you know, and treat him like he was a deponent in a deposition. So other interesting facts here that I was able to elicit were that it generally takes about a single day to get an appointment. So not too long. You call up today, you can get an appointment probably tomorrow or the next day.
That's much better than I thought it would be.
Yeah. This is what I was told.
Do you have to be a New York State resident?
That is correct. You have to be a New York State resident to use that phone line. And you can be out of state, but so long as you can come back to New York to a testing facility or get to one of these drive-through places, you can avail yourself of these services, which I think are really good. Another point that people may or may not know is that results take 3 to 5 days to come in. The way in which this works, I asked about the test itself. How does this work? You know, I said I heard it was painful, that, you know, they have to stick something up your nose. What's going on with this? And he said to me, well, you know, it's a swab through the nasal cavity. And I said, okay, well, it sounds unpleasant. He said, well, it's not terrible. You know, for what he said, you know, it didn't seem horrible. It's probably fleeting uncomfortableness at most. If you think about it, if the president got through it, I think anybody can, right? With respect to the drive-through facilities, I asked him about the locations of those, and he told me that the one closest to the city, closest to New York City, of which he was aware, was Jones Beach. That's the one I think that we've all heard about. So those are sort of the bare facts here. Now, if you want to make an appointment through this hotline and you have not been able to rule out the common cold or the flu with your general practitioner, in order to make that appointment, you do need to meet certain other criteria in order to get an appointment. Okay, now this is important. Some of those other criteria that they are going to consider in scheduling the coronavirus testing appointments are things like, are you a healthcare worker? Have you had any contact with anybody who was a confirmed case of the coronavirus? Have you traveled to any high-risk countries, or rather returned from travel to any high-risk countries? And do you have any direct association with places like nursing homes, childcare facilities, schools, et cetera? And that could include, and I asked this specifically, you know, if you drop your child off at PS whatever in the city, does that count as contact with a school? And he said, yes, it would. And especially if there were any confirmed cases of the coronavirus at that school. Now, if you just, you know, are sneezing and you're feeling a little bit achy, they probably aren't going to put you high on the priority list, because they are trying to schedule the coronavirus testing on the basis of the severity of cases. So, you know, depending upon how they weigh those factors, the Department of Health will weigh those factors. You know, whether you're a healthcare worker, that probably gets you quite a few points in terms of the severity of needing testing. Have you been in close contact with somebody who's a confirmed case? You know, again, this is probably a major factor in determining whether or not you should be immediately tested, or perhaps tested a little bit later on. But the more pressing the need, the more likely you are to get in there very, very quickly.
Well, so, my only question with that is, if somebody is really sick, are they in a state to get in a car and drive to one of these testing facilities?
Probably not. Probably not. At that point, I mean, I think, look, I'm not a doctor. I'm a lawyer, but I would say it would probably be a better idea to get yourself to an emergency room and to call 911. You don't want to be in a car driving when you're fatigued, sweating, aching. You know, look, it can be hard to move your neck around and look for traffic. I certainly think at that point it would be advisable to call for an ambulance. Here's another way in which, though, you can get yourself to the drive-through, which is actually quite interesting, and it avoids the need to go through this rigmarole of whether or not you've had contact, you know, with a confirmed case or your healthcare worker, et cetera. If you call your doctor and you make an appointment, and your doctor says to you, well, you know what, I think you need a prescription for a coronavirus test, and he writes you a prescription for a test, you can just drive to one of those drive-thrus without an appointment with a prescription and get a coronavirus test taken. No appointment necessary if you have a prescription. That's what I was told today. So, again, this, you know, very important, obviously, to keep in touch with your primary care physician, your general practitioner, because this is a person who may be able to get you that prescription that gets you literally, you know, to the front of the drive-thru. So that's an interesting point, I thought. I'll pause there and ask if you guys have any questions, Emmanuel and Connell.
No, other than the fact that you sound pretty good. You don't sound like you're sick. So I'm hoping that...
I think I'm all right.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you're recovering there in isolation. We're going to be opening up phone lines in about a half hour or so for listeners to call in if they have questions or experiences or concerns that they want to share. It's so important that we have this facility available for our listeners to be able to communicate with us, with each other, and just feel a little saner. So, Alex, the info you gave us is extremely valuable, and just the experience alone. Of course, it is just a little bit of info. It's just about some of the testing facilities and some of what you're told in just one state. Every state is different, and some are more lacking than others. But I think the more information we spread around, the more we'll finally figure out what's actually going on.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. And you know, you mentioned something interesting, Emmanuel, too, is, you know, we want to open up the phone lines for callers to share their experiences and things. And if I could just share one thing about this, and, you know, and you said that I sound well, and I do feel well, and I know that I'm trending, and I'm going to get better. But at the outset, when this was happening to me, it's very scary. And you don't know what's going to happen. But if you keep a cool head about you while everyone else is going insane, you know, you can steady yourself. But I'll tell you that the most difficult thing about this was coming here to this house that I always come to with my family and my children. And now I'm here without them. And because we're doing the right thing and we're quarantining me, I may have this virus, I may not. But I'm going to make sure that I recover and get back to them. But being away from them is the hardest part of this right now. Not knowing when I'm going to be able to hold my two sons in my arms. Or see my wife and kiss her. It's breaking our hearts because right now our family is torn apart. And I did all the laundry that I brought with us today. And as I'm folding the clothes of my 1.5-year-old, I mean, it brought tears to my eyes today to see his clothes here without him.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and that's what we were talking about, just these little moments that bring it all home. And you know, you feel it, whether it's through video, audio, or just memories.
Yeah, well, I think they're all listening tonight as well, by the way. So if I could just tell them, I love you guys. Thank you for listening. And we'll be back together soon.
Was that to your family or to us?
To my family, but you know, you could take it for what it's worth too.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I was very moved for a second there, but fine. Okay. Well, we'll just exchange firm handshakes next time we meet.
We say that every week, though, don't we?
That's why he mistook it. That's
yeah, it's true.
Exactly.
So behind the scenes, Kyle has been working feverishly to try to establish a Skype connection to Rapti Firefly and Gila, who also share living accommodation, so it's safe for them to be together. And I'm not sure, Kyle. Do you think we connected or not? Because Skype
idea how
okay,
it works.
Okay, we're gonna try. Hold on. Is anybody there? Speak now.
We're here.
We are indeed here.
Okay, wow. You did it, Kyle. You haven't been answering our messages that we've been typing on the screen saying, "Are you there?"
Well, the thing at the studio is there's two machines. They both have identical stuff in it. You have to switch back. I don't even know how any of it works. So I'm glad you're here, though.
I don't know how it works, period. And I'm kind of happy I don't, because that's more room in my brain for other things. But tell us what you guys are up to and where you are.
So we are in our charming home down the block from the payphone that we were on a couple weeks ago. I've been on work from home since Monday. So I've been working from home, and we have now transformed our recording space. Our recording space is also my office space now, but it's turned back into our recording space so we can talk to you guys.
Yeah, and I'm spending time at my little cabin that I have up in the Poconos with my beagle Cleo. And I'm also here in Queens with Gila. And she fortunately has the ability to work from home for her day job. I do not, so I'm scheduled to go back in tomorrow to my workplace, and who knows what I'm walking into, but I'm sure it'll be fascinating.
So, Rob, you haven't been given the okay to work from home, or your job just doesn't allow you to do that?
No, my job is not one can do from home. It's a technical engineering job that one has to be present to do. And so I'm considered essential staff, and we'll see for how long that lasts.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing where not every worker, I mean, people involved in production, people that are making things or moving things and all of that, they really can't stay away, and especially if they're critical products and services.
Uh-huh, absolutely. And I think we forget that a lot when we tell people just kind of relax and enjoy the time off. Yeah, a lot of people can't do that. And that means, Rob, you have to ride mass transit, I guess, every day, right?
Absolutely. Although it's been fascinating doing that over the past week or so, and just watching the ridership go down and down and down. And right now, it's basically a ghost town on wheels. It's fascinating. One doesn't often get to see rush hour transit so sparsely populated.
I was hearing about how the MTA is in dire financial straits now because of this as well. We're going to see the effects in every aspect of our lives. So again, we're not alone as individuals. A lot of things are going to be falling apart. But, you know, that is what government is for. That's why you need a strong system to step in when things get bad. You might call it socialism, but I call it responsible government. And I think we're all going to learn a lesson about how vital that actually is and what the cost is if that's not there.
Absolutely. I mean, looking at what's going on in the world right now and how people are taking care of each other, which is great, but people are taking care of each other right now in ways that the government should be. Those in charge should be providing certain services, certain abilities for people to keep doing their day to day, whatever it is they need to do to live. That's not happening, at least not at present.
Yeah, there's only so much people can do under duress and under so much stress, and especially if there is not a lot of understanding, like we had said before, about landlords or rent and other sort of things that are recurring and not really subject to any kind of pause at the moment, not at all like some of the other services like telecommunications and so forth, which are stepping up, and utilities and the like. But I find that it's sort of like a big money-making game that, well, we can't really play the game if people aren't around to be involved in it. So it has to be that things like transit systems, they will have a bailout, the first of probably several, because without people, those systems do not operate.
It's a weird thing, but in a way, I'm almost comforted by the fact that we have wasted so much money year after year after year in defense, because now we know, hey, that money is there. We come up with that money every year. It comes out of our taxes, and now we're going to have to change that habit. The money is there. It just has to be directed into the appropriate places. And I think people are going to agree pretty much unanimously that, yeah, this is the time that you take care of the people and, you know, maybe buy a new missile a few years down the road or something.
Yeah, the alternative is unrest. And that is something a government fears.
Have any of you guys seen any unrest out there?
We've seen some rest, a great deal of rest. But I mean, apart from Gila, you were in the shops earlier.
I was in the grocery store earlier, and there is not a single, at least earlier today, there was not a single egg in the grocery store that we frequent. The entire, like, top to bottom, the entire shelf where they keep the eggs was just empty.
That's weird.
It was deeply unsettling. Like, the things that people are choosing to panic buy, deeply unsettling.
Yeah,
I will admit, I panic bought some clothes. I'm wearing them right now. But, like,
wait,
there
were
no eggs.
Who runs out of clothes during a pandemic? I don't understand how you would run out of clothes.
Oh, no. I knew I was going to be working from home. I needed something comfy. I panic bought a sweatsuit.
Okay. Wow.
The new normal uniform.
Exactly.
The thing is, though, like, the things people are choosing to freak out over and hoard. Like, as you said, toilet paper. Nobody was running out of toilet paper before people started panic buying and hoarding toilet paper. You know, eggs. If people are actually hoarding those eggs that we didn't see in the store, eggs are not known for staying around all that long. I mean, you're going to end up with a bunch of rotten eggs unless you can eat them all in time.
Yeah, and milk. People always buy gallons of milk. What are you going to do with all that milk? You know, it's still going to be there the next day. The stores aren't closing.
They're not. And I think that was one interesting thing that I've been, you know, as people are starting to talk about shelter in place, as people are starting to talk about, you know, not leaving your house. And I've been talking with friends of mine who live in Orange County and who live in Salt Lake City, and they've got these big houses and they've got backyards. And I'm like, okay, great. We live in a studio apartment. And if I can't leave it, I am like, cabin fever is not even a joke here. So, like, you know, I took myself to a mailbox a long way away on Monday just so I could walk. And I actually had to go do some on-site IT stuff for my boss the last couple of days. So I went to her house. I walked to her house. It's not far, but it was a way to get out. And mostly social distancing, I think.
Yeah, and that's perfectly okay, and that's actually a good thing, and you'll notice differences, and that's something that you share with other people, and that's what it's all about. But Gila, just to put your concerns at rest, we are not going to have shelter in place in New York City, not ever. I don't see that happening, and I, the governor agrees, so I think since you need the governor to say this, and it's not a fight between him and de Blasio. I know everyone loves to have this scenario where they're constantly at each other's throats. They're working together. They're both doing a really good job, I think. And we should support their efforts and listen to what they have to say. And also notice that when they give a press conference, as opposed to the federal press conferences we're seeing, they keep 6 feet apart. Do you notice that? It's really kind of spaced out. But in when there's one of the federal ones, they're all bunched together. I cannot believe it. I care about them. You're going to get everybody sick if you're that close together for what, an hour and a half? That is not smart, and it doesn't send a very good message at all.
It was also – that's something that I keep coming back to, that one of the things that's scariest about this whole experience is that right now we are lacking one trusted voice of reason. Like, who's our Walter Cronkite right now? We don't have one. And what I've said to Rob a few times, I said to a friend of mine, is the closest thing we have to one single national voice of reason has been diagnosed with the coronavirus and has been quarantined in Australia.
Well, you know, Tom Hanks might be your voice, but for me, I think we need to hear from Jon Stewart. That's what I think.
Where
are you, John? We need you. We need to hear what you have
farm?
To say.
I think he's on a farm.
Okay, fine, but I'm sure they have connectivity there, and that's probably a very good place to be. Alex, are you still with us from Pennsylvania?
I am indeed. And to go back to the subject of panic, a couple minor points of New York panic that of which I became aware. I have heard reports that there are now bouncers at certain grocery stores as well, making sure people don't get out of line. I've heard reports of people getting extraordinarily nasty with each other over minor indiscretions in grocery stores, especially in my neighborhood. And when I was cycling to the office last week, heading up 6th Avenue, you know, somewhat early in the morning, there was a massive line coming out of Trader Joe's. I mean, going all the way around the block just to get into Trader Joe's one morning. I mean, it's a little nutty. It's kind of crazy.
You know, it's interesting because maybe we're just lucky, but Kyle and I have been to a few stores, and the shelves have been stocked pretty abundantly with most of the things we need. Yeah, not toilet paper, but you know, we don't need that. And that's just a panic buying example. But you were able to find piles and piles of corned beef yesterday without any problem. I did notice in the frozen section there was only one Hungry Man meal left. So apparently that's where the crowds of people stormed. but I didn't see anybody being rude or panicky or things like that. And I think that's what we have to bring forward to everybody else, is a sense of calmness, and that we're going to take care of each other and we're going to be smart about this. And that's how we get through it.
Yeah, we noticed maybe one security person at a grocery store. But the other really interesting thing that they immediately started last week was no more self-checkout. The touchscreens. People touching touchscreens. And
actually, the store we were in yesterday had self-checkout.
Yeah, well, it wasn't. I'm not saying across the board, but in one of a few stores that we go to every now and then, we noticed that that was just conveniently under construction or just not available. And they went old school to actually have a checker, someone running stuff, ringing it up, taking payment. But you had the sense that not only are they going to maintain that area as far as keeping it clean, but they're also looking at customers like, hey, how are you doing? A computer's not going to, I mean, maybe we could get it to take your temperature or something, but there's that little extra bit of personnel that can actually check in with each customer. So if somebody looks like they're not having a good time, they're not doing so well, that can be noted, and that cashier might be able to have that info if it becomes helpful in a later point.
We had a damn robot come up on us in the supermarket aisle. I don't know if other stores have this, but Stop and Shop has these 6 foot tall robots that roam the hall. They I guess they're cleaning the floor or something, but they have eyes and they're I think they're looking at you. And this one was following us. It was really kind of weird and bizarre.
It's got lasers
too. It was not keeping 6 feet away. I kept demanding that it keep 6 feet away, but it wasn't listening to me.
It was really a pushy robot.
I never say anything like that. But you know, on the other radio show we do yesterday, a caller suggested something, which I think is ingenious. And that's check out some of the Asian supermarkets, because a lot of people are being filled with misinformation and suspicion and thinking somehow this has something to do with Asian people. And you might find really heavily stocked supermarket shelves that the mainstream stores have run out of. You might even find toilet paper there. So if you can put prejudice and fear aside for a second, you might find that it really benefits you.
That's a very good point, and it's something that Gila and I have been trying to do in our neighborhood, is make sure to keep supporting the small businesses around you. I mean, we're in New York City. We have a ton of food establishments, dining places that can no longer have people come in and sit down and eat, and they're now dependent on delivery and takeout orders, and it's very important to keep supporting the small businesses around you. Maybe instead of going to, say, McDonald's or Starbucks, you go to your local bodega, you know, because these people are your neighbors as well as the people who live around you, and like help them keep doing what they're doing, because they're having just as much of a frightening moment right now as anyone else, and they could use your patronage.
Now, Alex, we talked earlier about the website that was bandied about in the press conference last week, I believe, which turned out not to actually exist. But now it's starting to exist. This is what Trump was referring to as far as Google putting out some kind of a site where people can get tested or start the process of getting tested. Leading to Google saying something to the effect of, no, that's not really what's happening, but we are, one of our companies is developing something. And that something is starting to be rolled out in parts of California. Did you get a chance to look it over at all?
Yeah, this was this projectbaseline.com, if I recall correctly, right?
Yes.
This Google coronavirus screening website that that Trump had, you know, mythically touted at some point last week. And, you know, yes, you and I spoke about that. And obviously we've talked about this the last couple of weeks. We're tracking all of the coronavirus-focused and COVID-19-related domain names and permutations thereof, as well as domains that contain the string Wuhan in them as well. And we did we started performing a hunt last week. I had some really good ideas as to how to identify what this website would have been. But it turns out that, you know, it really wasn't all that big a deal, and it wasn't what Trump had said it was, right? I mean, it's sort of in very early stages now. It says, you know, now open COVID-19 screening and testing support in California. So it's it seems to be, you know, focused to select counties in the Bay Area and high-risk populations therein. And if you're in the California Bay Area and interested in getting tested for COVID-19, I think that that website allows you to fill out some form of online screener, probably along the same lines as the information that we had discussed earlier with regard to the New York telephone number that I had called earlier this afternoon. So, yeah, not like so much of a big deal. You know, this wasn't this massive effort between the administration and Google that was going to somehow figure out how to combat the coronavirus with technology. The other
Did you catch though in the news conference, the press conference, how when Trump announced this, he said that this website would be up and running quickly, as opposed to some other websites, which was a shot at the Obamacare websites crashing.
Of course.
How petty can you get? We're in the middle of a national emergency, and you're taking pot shots at Obamacare now, of all times.
Not only is that petty to do that, but it's like ironically petty because it's a healthcare website, one that actually did work and cover people eventually.
Yeah, it did. But yeah. What's interesting here, though, if you look at the New York Times summary of what happened, this website that we're talking about now, it was created by Verily, which is a life sciences unit of Google's parent company, Alphabet, if you can keep track of all that. It fell far short of the wide-ranging capabilities administration officials described on Friday. So apparently it didn't live up to that perceived skill level. In its initial rollout, it was meant to point people to testing locations in two San Francisco Bay Area counties. It ran into two issues. First, it was telling people with symptoms of the virus that they were not eligible for the screening program. And second, they were asked to create an account with Google or log into an existing Google account and sign an authorization form. So only Google users, please. And within a few hours of launching, Verily said it couldn't schedule any more appointments at the time because it had reached capacity. So none of this is really that surprising, but it speaks to the fact that we cannot be so short-sighted as to think that there are miracle solutions or remedies or that we're not going to run into problems. And if you present it that way, it's going to be all the worse when they do fail.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the other interesting things about this website, too, is that this wasn't something that was newly registered. This domain name, projectbaseline.com, has existed continuously since the 15th of November, 2010. So it's been around for a while. The registrar was Mark Monitor, which is, you know, a very corporate domain name registrar. So maybe this was registered by you know, some individual and then transferred over to Verily. It seems to be hosted in Google. What the other interesting thing?
Well, Alex, if I could just step in, what someone should do, someone who has access to a keyboard and a screen, go to archive.org, go to the Wayback Machine and type in that URL, www.projectbaseline.com, and type in a date after, what did you say, 2010?
That's correct.
And yeah, see what shows up. See what shows up. See what they were using it for before.
Well, the other thing, so I'm going back in, right now we're doing this actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm not going to archive.org. But I'm going back to the Whois data that I have from 2010. I'm looking at December 13th, 2010 right now, and I'm seeing that the registrar back then was Alpine Domains, Inc., which is, you know, kind of weird. You don't really hear about them all that much, but it was also done through a privacy proxy, a British Columbian privacy proxy. So this thing has existed. It was used a very weird registrar 10 years ago. I'm seeing Alpine domains all through, let's say, up to 2015, 2016. Somehow, okay, here we go. Here's an interesting find. Between 2016 and 2019, I don't seem to have any historical Whois data on this domain, but I do see that on October 18th, 2016, the registrar is Alpine Domains. Then in on 10th September 2019, the registrar changes to Mark Monitor, and the name server is Google Domains. So it seems like they probably picked up this domain in September of 2019.
So you're saying it belonged to somebody else, and they just got the domain name?
I think so. I think they probably purchased it from whoever the original registrant was.
But assuming that they got it for this purpose, they did that in December of 2019. That would have been a good day for us to start getting our act together as far as tackling the virus, don't you think?
They did this in September of 2019.
Well, it didn't exist in September of 2019, I don't think. I think the virus began in December.
I'm not sure.
All right. Well, it sounds like there's more work that needs to be done as far as investigating that. But the important thing is that's a website that's out that has been highly touted.
It's still just vaporware, basically, right? I mean, that's the long and the short of this, is that it's nothing. It's just a domain that they were going to direct people to, and maybe, I guess, recycling it. It sounds like recycling it from some intellectual property or something that they got when they acquired some project or talent
yeah.
along the way.
It's one of many outlets for people to get more information on. We're another one. We're WBAI New York. We're off the hook. We're on the air for another hour. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. The phone number is 212-209-2877. Before we get into that, a couple of stories I just wanted to get into. We're on the phone with Alex, who is sick in Pennsylvania, but hopefully getting better, and he's isolated and not coming in contact with any human beings. Is that correct?
Yes, just an aggressively affectionate beagle.
Okay. All right. And I don't think dogs can get coronavirus. So I heard one report, but that might not have been true. Let's hope it's true.
Yeah, the jury is out, really. I mean, some people say be careful with your pets. Some people say, you know, they consider it to be a zoologic or a zoonomic type of virus, coronaviruses in general. But look, you know, hopefully I don't have this thing and it's something else. But, you know, we're doing okay over here. We're just lonely.
Yeah, and a pet is probably one of the best things you can have right now. So if you don't have one, you might want to consider getting one. And, you know, it's one of many ways to cope, to get through this crisis. And, of course, we're also joined by Rob and Gila from Queens via Skype. How are you guys doing over there?
We're doing well. We've been looking up the projectbaseline.com domain on the Internet Archive, and going back as far as the early 2000s, it was just empty domains, inactive domains. This domain is for sale up until 2017, which we're looking at now. And Gil, you're seeing some interesting stuff.
I am seeing some interesting stuff. So Project Baseline existed in 2017 as a joint project of Verily, which is this health section of Google and Duke University School of Medicine and Stanford School of Medicine. And it was a way to try to track health data on like 10,000 residents of the United States and try to extrapolate trends and data from that.
Interesting.
That's interesting. And that's why, you know, well, it doesn't explain why there was a gap, but it explains why between that 2016 who is and the 2019 who is, there was that change. Another interesting bit of information that I checked while you were checking other things, Gila, is I saw this from the command line, and I wanted to verify it with a couple of different sources because it didn't seem right. Maybe this is some kind of joke. But the site also appears to be located in Mexico. It's hosted on a Mexican IP address, 216.239.32.29, which is an IP address assigned to Mexico City.
That is a Mexican IP address. I recognize it.
My guess is...
I'm joking. I can't do that.
My guess is that 2017 iteration was probably a partnership Google was doing with universities because that was the easiest way to get participation, especially with something like medical information, because, I mean, it's the one thing that's really, really protected. And I think it would be very hard for Google to get people to opt in without some kind of conflict with people's medical records and the laws around that.
You know, this is all fascinating to a bunch of hackers. It probably means nothing to most people listening. So let's move on. We'll keep investigating the website and see who is running it, who was running it. But here's a story, and then we'll take some phone calls after that. I just saw this, and the headline really upset me quite a bit. Because the headline says hackers created thousands of coronavirus related sites as bait. Let me read you a little bit of this. It's from a site called the Hacker News, but they don't really seem to know much about hackers. As the world comes to grips with the coronavirus pandemic, the situation has proven to be a blessing in disguise for threat actors. That's a better term, isn't it? Who've taken advantage of the opportunity to target victims with scams or malware campaigns. Now, according to a new report published by Checkpoint Research and shared with the Hacker News, hackers are exploiting the COVID-19 outbreak to spread their own infections, including registering malicious coronavirus-related domains and selling discounted off-the-shelf malware in the dark web. Special offers by different hackers promoting their goods, usually malicious malware or exploit tools, are being sold over the darknet under special offers with COVID-19 or coronavirus as discount codes, targeting wannabe cyber attackers, the cybersecurity firm said. That report comes following an uptick in the number of malicious coronavirus-related domains that have been registered since the start of January, which our friend Alex has been monitoring. In the past few weeks alone, since the end of February 2020, we have noticed a huge increase in the number of domains registered. The average number of new domains is almost 10 times more than the average number found in previous weeks, the researcher said. 0.8% of these domains were found to be malicious. That's 93 websites. And another 19% were found to be suspicious. I think that's... I mean, there is something there. And Alex, I'm sure you can speak to this because you're investigating the same thing. But to refer to the people that are doing things like this as hackers, I mean, come on. How do you justify that? These are scam artists. What kind of hacking technique do you need to be a scam artist?
I completely agree. And, you know, they use the right word in the article, threat actors, right?
They went right back to hacker after that.
Then they went back to hackers. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, and look, dealing with this scourge of coronavirus and COVID-19-related domains is a lot to deal with these days. There's a lot of opportunism. We've been discussing this for weeks now. You know, once we started seeing upticks in this, sometimes first 400, then 600. Now, as of today, there were 2,121 coronavirus-related domains registered just in the last 24 hours. That's not even considering COVID-19-related domains, of which is probably another 700 or 800 easily. So, yeah, but this is not a hacker thing. This is a fraudster thing. This is opportunism. This is being a huckster. This is somebody selling cheap knockoff masks.
Huckster, not hacker. Huckster. I like that.
Huckster. Huckster, not hacker. That's exactly right, you know? This is the worst of salesmanship. You know, imagine somebody who is trying to sell you a vacuum door-to-door 30 years ago. And then go way lower than that, and you get the kind of people who are registering these domains, selling fake coronavirus vaccines, prescriptions, masks, et cetera, things that are putting people not just in danger of having their information stolen, but in actual physical danger of imperiling their health. I mean, there's a big difference there. I mean, even if you do for a moment buy into this notion that, okay, let's just call everything that happens online that has any semblance of criminal activity, let's call that to be hacker activity. If you buy into that, there are just so many real-world consequences in people's lives, physical consequences.
Absolutely, absolutely, Alex. It's wrong, and it's the tell is that it's like off-the-shelf malware. They're just slapping things together. This is opportunism, as you said, and it's not reserved just for this. In this moment, scammers be scamming.
Yeah, and if you're selling toilet paper on eBay, you're part of the problem, too.
Yeah, it's everywhere right now. I mean, there is a lot of people that prey on people's fear, and it is open season for that. And so people need to be vigilant at every turn. And if someone shows you something, or you realize someone is believing one of these deals, or trying to order fake supplies, or they succumb to a site that's preying on them in one form or another, or hurting them, make sure they know, you know, be alert and tell people to be alert,
yeah,
more specifically, so that they themselves are critical of the kinds of stuff out there in the streets and in reality, but also virtually and online.
There are no magic websites. There are no instant cures. Anyone who tells you that is full of it. Do not believe them. We don't know a lot that's going on, but anyone who purports to have all the answers probably has very few answers.
Yeah, your best bet is white blood cells and macrophages and antibodies in your own body.
Yeah.
And so, the thing about this, too, if I might jump in, is that we see this happen every time there's a big disaster. We saw it with Hurricane Sandy. We saw it with, you know, the Ebola virus. We saw it as far back as 9/11, where people online are ready to jump at any sort of thing that's in the news and see how they can scam off of it. And we really need to be hip about how this works, because now we're seeing a worldwide pandemic like we have not seen something on this level in any of our lifetimes, I don't think. And that's just going to be turned up to 11 across the board. The threat actors are ready for it. The threat actors are very sophisticated, and people are afraid and more willing to believe things that that they might be a little more shrewd about under normal circumstances. So you've got to keep your eyes open. You've got to keep your eyes open for yourself, for your, you know, friends and family that might also be reading these things, and just keep your eyes open.
Yeah, the last time we saw something like this was probably the 1918 flu pandemic, known as the Spanish flu. Do you know why it's called the Spanish flu, by the way? It's called the Spanish flu. It actually, it's one of the theories as to where it originated was Kansas. Okay. Kansas, and I think another possibility was a British army base or something like that. But yeah, why isn't it called the American flu? Imagine that. It's called the Spanish flu because at that time, 1918, World War One, a lot of the media was being censored and controlled because of the war. Spain was neutral. They didn't have that. So they were reporting much more dire outbreaks and numbers than anybody else. So it seemed to people who only got information from them that Spain was getting hit harder than anybody else, but Spain was simply telling the truth, and that's what got it labeled the Spanish flu. It's ridiculous to put a country in front of something like that. It's not a nationalist thing, and I know that Trump is calling it the Chinese flu is the most horrible thing you can possibly do.
Yeah, I read a really good article that basically sums up or comment about this, and the reason you really ought not to name things with a locale is that those locales then become stigmatized, and then guess what they do when something hits? They underreport, they don't talk about it, they try to cover it up, mm-hmm. They squelch dissent and people that are speaking out about something, and that's what sets up for the next pandemic or a huge delay in the response to one.
Yeah, absolutely. But differences, there are some things to be concerned about. If you look at that pandemic from 1918, over 100 years ago, it started off as just a fairly, I guess, a strong strain of flu, but not incredibly strong. It came back. It came back after a summer and was extremely, extremely strong and deadly, and killed an awful lot of people. The estimates range between 50 and 200 million people. It got kind of confusing because of the war as to who died from what, but the estimates for this country were something like 600,000 dying from that disease. Normally, the flu kills about 60,000 people a year in this country. That is a huge number too, but that is something that we have grown used to. So it was about 10 times worse for this country, but there are also lots and lots of differences. The way people lived back then, there were so few scientific methods of stopping something like this. It's extremely, extremely different scenario that we are in right now. They didn't have electron microscopes. They weren't able to come up with all kinds of antibodies and things like that.
Gene sequencing.
Yeah, it's very different. And this is something that we can get a handle on with the science that we have already learned and shared. So while you can look at that and go nuts thinking of the possibility of what could happen, keep in mind it's a different time and things have evolved quite a bit. And if we're on top of this, we will prevail in the end. If we were on top of it earlier, we would have prevailed sooner. That's certainly true. But it's definitely something to be very concerned with.
Look, I tend to agree with that entirely. And, you know, again, this goes back to the hacker ethos here. We're talking about information. And, you know, I don't necessarily always agree with the president at all. It's very rare that I do. But he was getting some criticism today at that press conference that I was watching for calling this the, you know, the Chinese virus. But some of the things that I think that he said in response to the criticisms were in fact valid and go to points that I think will resonate with the hacker community, which is that, look, I think the president is right about the fact that China probably could have shared more information more readily and earlier on about this virus than they did. And had they shared this information more readily and made it more accessible, the whole world would probably be in a better situation, right? That's not to say that, you know, they're entirely at fault for this virus spreading, but these are lessons to be learned. And as part of what we do is we figure things out and we share them with anybody who wants to listen.
I have to stop you there because, yeah, we have that reputation, but we didn't live up to that reputation, at least not on the governmental scale in the early part of this year. We were in northern Canada and we knew about this virus in January. How come Trump only seemed to find out about it last week? You know, if we had shared information and put resources into it, then a lot less people would be locked in their homes today. That is a fact. And a lot less people will die from this. But that's going to happen as a result of not doing enough. But I don't see anybody saying, let's name it the American flu because of that. You know, this guilt goes in so many different directions. Yeah, I absolutely agree. China should have done more. But when they finally did get on top of it, which didn't take nearly as long as it took us, they were very, very open with the information. And they got that out there. And had they not done that, it would have been a lot worse.
And there was still a delayed response because it wasn't taken seriously in the States.
And elsewhere, too. It's not just the States. I mean, in Italy, for instance, the death toll is about to exceed China. And that is because it wasn't taken seriously enough there as well. And because their health system is not as good as it should be. And we have that same problem here as well. So, yeah, you know, we can blame China for a lot of things, and they should accept the blame for that. But to name the virus after a country, after a people, that is just harmful in so many ways. And it leads to hatred and fear and prejudice in places so far away from there in the first place, because you're labeling people somehow as the cause of this.
And they're not naming it, they're renaming it. It already has a name.
Yeah, it has a damn name. He used a scientific name. Learn science, Trump. Come on, enough of this. Okay, we're going to open up the phone lines, 212-209-2877. We'd like to hear from people who are experiencing this craziness that we're all going through with your unique perspective. Maybe you could tell us something that you're doing to help stay sane, or some bit of info that you think we might appreciate. I don't want to hear about conspiracies. I don't want to hear about miracle cures or all kinds of things. That's not going to help. It's not going to make us feel better. It's not going to advance the conversation any. What will help is if we use our unique perspective. And I speak to hackers in general, but everybody as well, because we all have the ability to go out and or not actually go out, but, you know, stay around our house and just watch TV and listen to the radio and observe what's happening in society, what's happening around you, how are people acting, what are you being told, what's conflicting information, etc., and ways that we can help each other. That's what I want to hear. And I see a full switchboard here, so let's see what's out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yeah. This is the Gibson from Louisville, Kentucky.
How you doing?
I'm calling in. Doing well. Doing well. Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm calling because I run an organization called Hackers.Town. We're an online entity, if you will, that has a server on the Fediverse that's a Twitter clone, basically. And we wanted to offer – we're normally a closed community, but we wanted to be able to offer today everyone listening to your show the ability to join our community. If they're working from home, they need to be able to reach out and take care of mental health and actually have real human contact out there, and they don't have that, we offer that. We're an InfoSec and hacking site, basically. We have chat servers, everything, a full social community. And it's been my concern. I've worked from home for years, but seeing this happen and seeing all these people get sent home all at the same time, it feels to me like there's something that we can do as a community to give back and give them a place to be while they're out of there and still socialize.
That sounds absolutely tremendous. How can people get involved in this?
Rob Firefly actually is a member of our crew.
Are you, Rob?
I am indeed.
Yeah. To get in, just send a request to me in email to gibson@hackers.town. We keep the gates closed for open enrollment because, you know, there's always people trying to get in to cause trouble with us because we are kind of a hacking and InfoSec-focused group, right? So we don't want to just open it up and have a bunch of people coming in screwing with us. But if you want to join, we're a warm, welcoming place. And we try to be as understanding of everybody. Not everybody there is hacking and InfoSec, so don't be intimidated. There's a lot of people that are just friends that come there to hang out and be a part of it.
And that was dot town, you said? Dot T-O-W-N?
Yeah, hackers.town.
Oh, I didn't know that was a top-level domain.
It is a top-level domain, yeah. We've been using it for about 3 years now for our site. Basically, we've got a bunch of different projects and stuff we do all the time, trying to open up freedom of the internet, so on and so forth. The idea of, like, we run our own DNS over HTTPS server now, right, to keep people from having to log through Cloudflare to get their requests.
Great.
We do things like that, ongoing projects to make the internet a better, more hospitable place, and kind of we're trying to help restore it back to the future it had when we all fell in love with it in the 90s.
That sounds awesome. And give the address one more time, and then tell us quickly how you're staying sane throughout all this.
Yeah, so that's hackers.town, and the email address to request membership is thegibson@hackers.town. That's me. I'll answer as quickly as I can. And as far as staying sane through all this, I'm not sure that I am, to be honest. My wife is she's an intake She does intake patients at a children's hospital. So my threat model is basically, okay, I'm going to get it at some point. Let's do this. It's scary here. It's not as bad as you guys have it on the coast yet, but it's starting to get there. Things are starting to shut down. We're starting to see things like empty grocery stores and people responding. But people didn't take it seriously that first week or so. I do threat analysis for a living, so I was building out the threat model for the past month and just seeing it all get a little too real too quick. So we're going through all the standard stuff you guys did a week or so ago, and our mayor's already said that we've got about 7 days before we're probably going to be under lockdown like San Francisco as well. So we're prepping as best we can to undergo a month or two of not going outside much, and that's about it.
Well, we hope you get through that, and we hope people use your service. It sounds great, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Great. It's a great community. Hope people can take advantage of it.
All right. Be well.
You too. Thanks.
Wow. That's awesome. And great people in Kentucky, too. Got to say that.
Yeah, absolutely. By all means, if people have projects and spots that are working on this, that are helping organize respond in any way in various localities or all around the world, we'd love to share what people are working on and how they're collaborating.
Let's take another call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes, hi. I had a question about the test itself. Alex gave a very good overview earlier. Is there a cost associated with this test? I just wanted to know if it's expensive or is it free.
Alex?
That
I'm here. That I do not actually have the answer to, and I apologize.
I can tell you the New York test does not have a cost attached to it. I do know that.
Okay. Is that right?
I wasn't sure about that because I'm not working right now, and I really do have to watch my spending habits.
You won't have to spend anything on this. So that was very clear from the governor. And again, the number is 888-364-3065. Just call that, and you can get an appointment. Best of luck to you. Thanks. Thanks for that call. Let's take another one. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hi. I have a cautionary tale to share with people. About a week and a half ago, my arthritis flared up, and after days of difficulty, I managed to see a doctor, got a steroid shot, and he told me, if you need to see me again, if you show up when I'm physically in the office, I will see you. So after 8 days of the shot not doing anything much for me, I showed up again today. They gave me an infectious diseases screening tool with a few obvious questions on it, and one of them is, do you have a cough, shortness of breath, or a sore throat? When I told them I had a slight cough, because I've had a very, very mild cold for a while, they said, you can't see the doctor. This is the same mild cold that I had when I had seen the doctor 8 days before. And I had to repeatedly say, I want to hear that from the doctor, because he said he'd see me. And I said, well, you can't see him. Well, I want to hear that from him. Well, you can't see him. Finally, they established from the doctor that he could see me. But doctors are now not touching patients. And he told me that if I had come in today for the shot that I got 8 days ago, I wouldn't have been able to get it because he's not touching patients. I'm also supposed to follow up on this with physical therapy, but all the physical therapy places are shut down. I got new eyeglass prescriptions. My glasses are broken, and the eyeglass place has shut down. I'm legally blind without glasses, and I can't get my glasses.
Wow, that is something. I hadn't even heard of that.
This is the complexity of the stress that the healthcare system is under right now. And it's true that basically because this situation is so dynamic, the policies and the changes from New York State Health and the city and nationally all together, though they are somewhat coordinated at this point, we're starting to see a lot more of what we would expect as far as a response and collaboration. Sometimes it's that terrible timing, and there's this huge push to have doctors see patients using telemedicine. That's been thrown around a lot in the last week. Mm-hmm. They're encouraging people to use video and other sorts of tools to chat with your practitioner over the telephone or over the web. And that may or may not be accessible to everyone. And unfortunately,
it won't get you a steroid shot.
No.
You need to be able to walk.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So I would keep checking back. I'm not a doctor. I can't really give you a specific advice for the situation, but I completely empathize with the confusion there. And it's very good that you were adamant and forceful in advocating for yourself, at least to make sure they were aware of your situation.
Can I ask, you have health insurance?
Medicare, Medicaid.
Well, is there a number you can call to ask them what you should do in this situation, particularly the glasses?
I've never found the bureaucracy to be helpful.
Well, try calling, and if any of our listeners have answers for this, please write to us, oth@2600.com, and we'll be sure to mention it on the air in future weeks, if we do get an answer. But I really hope that problem is solved, because
the glasses are paid for, but the place is shut down.
Uh huh.
I wonder if there's any alternative, like where your prescription, the details of it, could be matched somehow and created off-site and sent to you. But that's, I don't know really very much about getting glasses myself.
It needs to be fitted into the new frame.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, yeah.
Well, best of luck with that. I'm sorry about that unfortunate chain of events. But just remember, you're not alone. A lot of people going through similar things. We'll have great stories to tell when this is all over. And you always have the radio, so please stay in touch. Let's move on to another call down here. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hey, good evening, guys.
How you doing?
Hey, I would recommend to the last caller, I don't know what town she lives in, but she should call the local police in her town because they have an access number to that company, probably the eyeglass place.
Okay.
And I'm sure they can help her out. They'll make a phone call and somebody will be down there to get her glasses.
That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
I had to do that for my buddy's mom up in Auburn, Maine years ago when they had no heat. And she said, I called Auburn police. They were there. They had 6 plumber's trucks there within a half hour when it was like 5 below and everybody was boiling spaghetti pots of water.
Uh-huh.
But I would just like to say something as a fireman, as a forest fire service guy. I would just hope that people are going to start to heed the call because this country is, you know, is so unprepared. I know as far as going out to forest fires over 32 years, and that's only forest fires. So you can imagine, like, when tornadoes hit, like Katrina and all that, totally unprepared. But the problem is, real quick, I'll make it real quick, in this country, the problem is we are so unprepared because the military is robbing the money from this country. The kids in school have no school lunches, no school breakfasts, but the country didn't start that. The Black Panthers started that in 1967 in Oakland. Free schools, acupuncture clinics, you name it. But the government, the U.S. military budget has to be strangled because they're killing everybody's future in this country and killing us at the same time. And to go bail out the airlines again and the cruise ships, they're the biggest polluters in the world.
True.
And the military, the biggest wasters of fuel in the world. So I just pray everybody heeds this call because we're totally unprepared. As usual, as long as the military is sucking the money out of this country, that's all I can say. And hopefully we're not going to be stuck with Biden or Trump. Thank you.
Thanks for that call.
I'm right there with you. I think I'm really skeptical of Boeing getting so much of a bailout, given what's going on right now and how closely they are to a lot of defense. So we really should have strings attached to any kind of compensation for those industries at this point. And also just with the expertise from the Forest Service, I know there's probably a lot of people from that area. I know I saw a couple clips on New York One. There was like a ranger working on a command center, and they do have a lot of skills around the incident command system, and I am sure that is something that is being deployed and scaled very quickly all over the country right now. And it's good that we can borrow from the Forest Service and how they handle incidents, but we are really unprepared.
Yeah, that seems to be what we keep coming back to. As far as bailouts, hey, how about we bail out our high-speed rail network that doesn't exist? You know, that would be something that would be really good to have, knowing what we can just go back to it when it's safe to travel again, and a lot cleaner than flying every place. Maybe we'll learn something from this, but it's still going to take a lot of time.
I heard Amtrak's at 50%. Mm-hmm. Or like 50% ridership, but that was last week.
Yeah.
So that may have changed.
Well, everyone is suffering. Everyone is down. Yeah. That is for sure. Rob Gila, how are you guys doing? We haven't heard from you in a while.
We're doing well, thanks. And there's a lot of great things being said by our callers. And also, I want to just get back to the community aspects of this. We're taking care of each other. However alone you feel, there are people who can look out for you. So, like, you know, get in touch with your friends and family, at least online. You know, video conferencing is great. A lot of events that have been going on have been replaced by video conferences for the time being, local gatherings and things like that. But also just say hi to your neighbors. You can do that from more than 6 feet away if you like. Not everyone speaks to their neighbors these days. Go ahead, say hi. Ask how people are doing. Check on each other.
You know what we did yesterday? A friend of ours has no computer, lost his computer, and does not have cable TV. And desperately wanted to see some TV shows. So we actually burned a DVD for him and drove over to his house and pitched it onto the front lawn because we didn't want to have any contact. And he was there. He picked it up, and we had a nice telephone conversation through the window of the car. But it was great. It was one of those moments that, you know, you can just make happen and do something safely and help somebody enjoy something a little bit more, being able to just do something like that. I'm sure there are a million stories, and we're going to hear them all.
Absolutely. And it's our job to make those stories happen for each other, too. So, you know, next time you go shopping, see if anyone wants anything. You can hang out on their doorknob. They don't have to open it until you're gone.
Absolutely, yeah. And hackers, we come up with some of the most ingenious solutions and things that no one else has tried. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. All right, second phone call.
True. I want to give a quick shout out to a site called selfcare.tech, which was made for members of the tech community who work from home. This came out a few years ago, I think, and was just basically tips on how to do that sort of thing while taking good care of your physical health, your mental health. And with what's going on now, they're redoubling their efforts, and it's a community-based effort. You can contribute to it yourself, selfcare.tech.
Okay, let's take this phone call here. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello, Off the Hook. This is the doctor in the Bay Area. We've been cooped up here for about since March 1st. We're now on shelter in place.
Can you tell us what shelter in place is?
Okay, so basically the various area governments in the Bay Area have said, unless it's absolutely needed, like to pick up medicine or go to the grocery store or something, you should not be outside. Or you should not be traveling, I should say. You can be outside, but no gatherings. All the concerts have been canceled. All of the festivals have been canceled. A whole lot of events have been canceled because everyone's concerned.
It doesn't sound that different from what's happening in New York.
It's not that different. I haven't been in New York in a while, so I can't say. It's just a lot of folks are just choosing to just stay at home and stay cooped up. I've been out a little bit. I've been grocery shopping out here a couple of times. I've also been just keeping my ear to the ground. Not a whole lot of air traffic right now. I was looking at ADS-B traffic this morning, and at least half the planes on the map were not in the air. I'm not sure why that is. It's a little bit creepy.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, these are the things to notice. Look at those apps and see what's different. Look outside, see what sounds different. Maybe you'll hear an owl now in San Francisco because all the planes aren't making noise. Maybe you'll see the sky better. But if you do go out, though, if you get in a car and drive somewhere or just walk around the block, is somebody going to stop you or question you?
No. Basically, it's to keep people from – it's to lower the risk of everyone in general – for exposure. Like, if you're standing in line at a grocery store, and the lines at the grocery stores have been terrible for the last couple of weeks, there's a really good chance that you might come into contact with someone who has COVID-19. So to try to keep that from happening, I think they'll just assume that you're going to the bodega or something to get groceries, because most of the grocery stores have been cleaned out. It's weirdly quiet right now. BART's been really quiet. Not a whole lot of cars. You can't actually hear the birds out here. Normally you can't.
Wow. Does the air quality seem better?
You know, it does. The sky is definitely more clear. It's been chilly out here. I think it's in the low 50s right now. But, yeah, the air quality is significantly better.
How about that? Wow. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. I'm glad we heard from somebody in the Bay Area, and I hope you guys weather it out. Hope it ends soon, but maybe keep some of the good habits now.
Yeah, we're going to try to. We've been taking care of each other out here as best we can. My family has been in fairly frequent but physically distant contact with our neighbors. Some of our neighbors are older folks, so we're keeping an eye on them. We keep an eye on our landlord. We keep an eye on our handyman. If anybody needs help, that's, you know, it's down to us now. So, you know, community is everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much, and hang in there.
We're working on it, man. Take care out there.
All right. I am blown away sometimes by just the spirit of people and the integrity. I see that every day, you know, around us locally, but I also see it far away in this country, around the world. This is who we really are. This is what we do for each other. You know, we forget about the nonsense, the things that keep us apart. We forget about the trivial things like paying the rent. You know, we, in the end, we look out for each other and make sure that we're okay. We're getting through this all right, because whether it's just life on Earth or this pandemic, we are all going through it together. And I hope this is something. Hope this is something that we remember. Sorry, that's a news bulletin from the New York Times. Whenever it makes that sound. ICE just announced they're going to stop making arrests. Isn't that nice?
Oh,
we'll see how long they can hold on to that good habit. This is Off the Hook, extended edition. We are going to be extended for the duration of this crisis because local radio is so hugely important. I am so happy we got this radio station back. Can you imagine if we still had Pacifica Across America airing now? that would not have helped our listeners at all, would it? But we have, oh my God, we have people here, local people. We are live right here in Brooklyn right now, taking precautions. We have the studio door locked, making sure nobody else comes in. It's awkward, but it's necessary. And we're here for you. We're here for you to call us, share your story. And we're not the only show doing that. Other shows throughout the day and night here on WBAI will be doing that. And that's what we are about. That's what community radio is about. That is what we've been fighting for. Okay. It didn't have to take a pandemic to prove the point, but this is what it's all about.
Yeah. We hope it's loud and clear. And, I was saying this yesterday on the other radio station. This is the medium where you can be alone together. You can be listening and having a conversation, and especially with the phones, you can even speak back and speak to everyone else that's listening.
That would be a dandy slogan for WBAI. Be alone together. Okay, well, we'll send that one out for marketing research. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook.
Yes, hello.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. This is Effie from Greenpoint. I happened to call in yesterday.
You called the other show yesterday. Okay, great.
Yes. About rent strike or rent freeze.
Uh-huh.
And I have sort of an update, I guess, to that.
Well, the people listening now probably didn't hear you yesterday, so give a quick summation and an update.
Yeah, so it seems like, I mean, one of the biggest concerns that I and I think a lot of people have is rent. Coming to the realization that a month from now, those of us who cannot work and those of us who live paycheck to paycheck will be statistically unable to pay the next month's rent or the month after that. But yeah, so the sort of update I wanted to give is it seems like a lot of people realized that yesterday because as of this morning, I'm seeing a lot of momentum online on social media in a few different ways oriented around the idea of a rent strike.
Yeah, it makes sense. And not so much a strike, but just a pause because, you know, it's not like it's a grievance against the landlord. I'm sure there are plenty of those. But in this particular case, it's, you know, hey, what do you expect us to do? We can't make money out of air.
Certainly. It seems like it's sort of manifesting in three ways. One, I'm just sort of seeing people post about it maybe sort of memes or lighthearted stuff about manifesting a rent freeze. So it's sort of in the zeitgeist. People are at least talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The other way I'm seeing it is that people seem to be trying to organize within their own building to coordinate with, you know, the people within the building itself to have a discussion with your neighbors about doing a rent strike or a rent freeze. And then the third way is it does seem that there's some really large petitions that are being organized. I'm seeing the largest one that I've currently found, and I don't know anything about this organization, but there's a @RentStrike2020 Twitter account, which seems to be operated by something called the Rose Caucus. And they have a website, rosecaucus.com/petitions, where they have individual petitions to Cuomo for New York about requesting a 2-month basically rent freeze, and I guess trying to encourage people to join in a rent strike in solidarity at the end of the month. I don't know if any of these things will help. I don't know if they'll work. The idea of going on a rent strike is scary because you don't know what'll happen if you don't.
Well, I can tell you right now, you will not be evicted in New York. That's frozen.
Yeah, and it's. Do we know exactly how long? I don't know if anyone else has heard, but it's. I think it was 30 days the last time I heard the report.
Well, it's however long they hope it will last. But believe me, if this crisis continues, it will be extended.
It seemed limited.
It's limited for now, but it's going to be extended if nothing changes in the next month.
But if people are galvanized and already working on something that is a lot more comprehensive, perhaps that will be extended, taking direction from that movement.
Not only that, this is how societies change. After this is over, we are not going to be the same. We are going to look at healthcare in a completely different manner. We are going to look at rent and expenses and living conditions in a totally different manner. And that is the good that can come out of this. It takes something like this to shake us up and realize that, we can do better. This is where we need to improve. Doesn't matter who you voted for. Doesn't matter where you're from. We can all get together on this. And I think this might actually do it. This might actually unify people in a really, really positive way. And we might get something better out of it. You know, at such a cost, obviously, but it's my hope. Thanks for that call, and we're going to try and squeeze in one or two more. Good evening. You are on Off the Hook.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Good. How you doing?
Oh, a little sad, but not surprised in a way. And I thought the same thing. I thought, could this crisis really bring the world together? Could this really be the impetus or the catalyst to do that? Or the darker side, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but you said something. You said, what do you expect us to do? You know, there's a James Bond line. He says, what do we expect you to do? We expect you to die. There is a very, and you remember that, right?
Yes,
there's,
I do.
Right. Evil villain. But there's really evil villains in this world, and they want to depopulate. This was back from Bush. This is the New World Order. Could you imagine this is the way that they force everybody to get a vaccine, and this is how they implement everybody to have a computer chip? Sure, you want health care? Just put this computer chip in your wrist. Oh, no, I don't want that. How could you refuse that? How could you refuse if the government says you can't go out? Well, what happens if you need to get a computer chip? What do you do then?
Well, you know, it's interesting thinking. And I, you know, if everybody was not collectively not in control right now, I might attach some worry to that. I am worried for the future. I am worried about how authorities will say, oh, you know how to stay in your house for a month. You've done it before. You know how to be tracked. We already have that set up. So, yeah, the evil people, you know, the people you say rightfully exist, they are taking notes. They are taking notes now. But we need to also be taking notes on them and make sure that we don't become victims.
Okay, now listen to this. Everything that they do, they have to tell everybody in a movie or in music. The movie Soylent and Green, if you guys want to see the beginning of that, it will blow your mind. It's on YouTube. If somebody in the studio wants to look it up now. It's the year 2022. Everybody is wearing face masks. The world is frozen by a pandemic, a virus. Now, how would they know that back then?
Was that just a coincidence?
I would hope so.
The one deal that they supposedly have that they could do all this evil on the world is to let you know that they're going to do it, and you could see this in movies. Now, you could say, oh, that's just a conspiracy. How would they know? It's just a coincidence. No, science fiction and movies tells you, and you said you know how to stay in your house for a month. What happens when you have to report to a FEMA camp? What are you going to do then? No, I'm going to stay in my house. Well, we'll just have to take you there by force.
All right. I think you made your point, and I don't want to make people even more apprehensive than they are now, but keep thinking creatively. It's important, and thanks for the call. Okay. Yeah. I don't want to alarm people. Yeah. There could be very evil things going on out there, but, there's also very good things going on out there. We have to get a handle on that, control the situation.
Yeah. I mean, what really matters, to quote the film, it's the people.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same meaning in the film, but we matter. We have a say, and, not relinquishing that, I think, is really important, and observing and speaking. When we see things from a leadership point of view, when your representative and your local politicians have a chance to say something to regional and state and so on and so forth, we need to keep those communication lines open and mm-hmm. not relinquish all of that kind of power. But it's certainly, as E said, a moment where people are perhaps looking at this, just as we talked about scammers, in an opportunistic way. And I think even the markets, like you saw, the government throwing money at this, they're doing that because they want it to be back to what it was. And I think E's point was, it's never going to be the same.
It cannot be the same.
There's no amount of money they can throw at this to make us care about likes and go conspicuously consume.
No, this population will be traumatized. And there are good ways of being traumatized too, and bad ways. This is a bad way right now, but I think it can turn into good. Yes, Rob.
The thing is that with this disaster that we're facing right now, we have more power than we ever had before, not only to educate ourselves and find out what's going on from the qualified sources, not the scaremongering sources, not the freak you out sources, but actual qualified, medically respectable sources, but also to connect among each other. And just keep the connection going between yourself and the people around you, and remind yourself that we're facing this all together. So, we get to decide right now if we want to give in to just being terrified and assume that all the worst is going to happen, or we could do something that I think is more in the hacker spirit and just absorb the data available to us and find our best possible course of action from there. And once we've gotten together and when we're helping each other out, then we just plain don't have to be as afraid.
Very true. Very true. So Soylent Green, we got to watch Soylent Green. Thanks to that caller for recommending that. What else are people, if you're in the mood for pandemics and epidemics and viruses Jeremiah, that's a great series.
It doesn't have to be that.
The end of the world, people, 28 days later. What?
No.
These are good films and series.
People could be reading Emerson and Thoreau, getting transcendental
Or listening to Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Yeah, all kinds of things. There are all sorts of things that we have gotten disconnected from. But also, it's kind of amazing to see them come back. Books, brick and mortar stores, radio, walking around outside, by your house and not with other people. But just appreciating the little things. The little things matter the most. That's always been the case. But maybe now we will remember that. All right, let's see if we can squeeze in one more. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Oh, I'm on the air?
Yes, go ahead. Be quick.
Look, why they say 1 in 4 people will have cancer in the next few years. Why aren't they making the big fuss about cancer and diabetes and strokes like they're making about this virus? Like last year, 80,000 people died from cancer. And that's not really an issue.
No, you're absolutely right. But there is a big difference, and that is that this is highly contagious, and we do not have any treatment for it right now. Any treatment. There is treatment for diabetes. There is treatment for cancer. It's not nearly effective enough. But this is something we do not have any defense against. That's why everybody's being told to stay inside and not to congregate.
And it moves very quickly. And the cases of infection are exponential. So there's a doubling, a constant doubling. And that just means it can get to more and more of the vulnerable people who will perish if they're not protected. And that's why we're doing these physical distancing.
Think of this, all these things that we are doing now as an effort, sacrifice from the people who aren't going to get sick to protect the people who will get sick. Okay, so you might not be at risk yourself for now, but you staying inside and not enjoying the things that you want to enjoy helps keep those other people going. And that is what we need to do as a society, as a race, to survive. And I think that is the most important lesson to be learned from here. These 2 hours flew by so fast. I am amazed. Heartened, too, from hearing from so many people. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. I don't know what things are going to be like next week. Can't really get much crazier than this, but I guess they can. We will do everything possible to come back and be here live and take phone calls and have all of us share this common experience. We want to hear your adventures, your observations. Please be safe. Please share with others. Be nice to others. Check in with others. Alex, Rob, Gila, hope you guys are doing all right, and I hope to see you in person again sometime soon.
You too.
Absolutely.
See you guys all soon.
All right, Alex, you get better out there.
Feel good, Alex.
I am. I'm going to be great. This is a very good and cathartic show, and I'm looking forward to another 2 hours next week.
All right. oth@2600.com is our email address. These efforts count. They matter. And they are going to make a huge difference, something we will never forget. Just stay strong. And we'll talk to you next week. And stay listening to WBAI. Good night. Monday finds you like a bomb. It's been left ticking there too long. You're bleeding. Some days there's nothing left to learn from the point of no return. You're leaving.
When James Brown sang It's a Man's World, he might have been speaking about Jamaica and the music industry there, where for the most part, women were not allowed to carve out a significant career in the music business. Join the award-winning Midnight Ravers on Friday, March 20th, 2020, from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. as we present Women in Roots, the Empress of Sound, from ska to rocksteady to reggae. Here's some of the greatest female vocalists in Jamaica's music history.